This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Good morning and welcome to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. Dr. Schertz is away on business today. This is Jim Russ sitting in for him today on the best of Tech Talk. And we have all the stuff you're used to here on Tech Talk Radio. In fact, we also have your chance to win a fabulous prize later on. So pay attention, enjoy, and let's get started here on the best of Tech Talk.
Now it is time for...
There's a letter in your mailbox.
And we have a letter from... Alan.
Aha. Thanks
Dear
for listening, Alan.
Tech Talk. I would like to start an IT career. What do you advise? I can't get a job without experience, but I can't get experience without a job. It's the chicken and egg problem.
Go figure.
And I seem to be caught between the chicken and the egg. Well, Alan, this is the same kind of question that we get from all of our students at Stratford University when they're starting out their careers. They need to get a job, but the job wants them to get experience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are a number of things that you can do quite readily. And the primary thing that you want to do, Alan, is to start acting like you're already working, that you're already a professional. But I mean, sort of the analogy I like to give, if you were a truck, if you wanted to drive a bus, become a bus driver.
You'd go steal a bus and drive it, right?
I mean, you would
No. You
would actually get some driving experience
mm-hmm.
first.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't say, well, I can't get a job as a bus driver until I get a job as a bus driver to get experience. You'd have to start getting experience before you get the job, actually, and that's kind of the key element. So, number one, start reading the kind of literature that people in the field read. They call these industry rags. You know, these are
mm-hmm.
like free,
sure.
They're freebies. They have, like in IT, you've got all kinds of things like PC Magazine. That was not free. You charge a little bit for that. They've got PC Week. They've got CIO Magazine at CIO.com, Network Magazine, Information Security Magazine at InfoSecurityMag.com. Lots of them. You can find them. You want to subscribe to a good number of those and just read what the people in the industry are reading. For one thing, it lets you know what is worth learning.
Mm-hmm.
And it also gives you some insightful comments to make while you are in the job interview. Now, secondly, you want to get the competencies that are demanded by the industry. Now, either through self-study or by going to school, like at Stratford University. And if you want to go into IT or programming, you need certain core competencies that the industry would like. Make certain when you're going into IT that you learn the standards and the procedures that support the industry. You see, if you understand the underlying standards, you have knowledge which is going to have a long time value. It's not going to go out of style, quickly. For
mm-hmm.
instance, the underlying protocol standard on the Internet, TCP/IP, Transmission Control Protocol, Internet Protocol, was actually developed out in California in 1973. It's been here 83, 93, 2003. It's been around for 25 years. So if you learn TCP/IP, the underlying protocol on the Internet, well, I mean, that's going to be around a good long while.
Sure.
And now that they have IP version 4 now, they're about ready to come out with IPv6, which is going to be here. So you understand any of the underlying software standards, you're going to be like XML, which is a standard way to transfer data from one database to another. So always go back to the standards organization and understand the underlying standards. It's really a way of learning. I like to give another analogy in terms of deciding what's worth learning. Suppose that you were driving down the street in a car.
That's a good way to drive down the street.
Normally I drive down the street.
Can I just say something? You're scaring me. You're holding scissors over there, and you put them down, please.
I was making some final adjustments to Blimpy.
You've got something sharp in your hands, and it's bothering me.
All right. You know, I don't have the best of reputations here in this studio, so I'll stay. I will put the scissors down.
Primarily with things in your pocket.
So when you're driving down the road, if you look out the windshield and you see a slight curve to the left, you know, it's relatively easy to respond to changes in the road. You can see the road, move up and down and right and left as you're driving. Now, suppose now you're looking out the side window of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And bushes and trees are flying by so fast, you say, how can I possibly keep up with all of what's going on? I can't keep track of all of the stuff passing by the side window. If you simply try to learn all the marketing hype that the company's come out with, it's like looking out the side window of the car. It's, you know, marketing hype comes and it goes, but it doesn't mean much. If you look out the front window of the car, it's like learning the underlying standards. Things don't really change that quickly.
Right.
And so that you can, they're around for a long time. You know, like, say Intel brought out their 32-bit chip back in 1985, 1986, and it wasn't until a good long while that Microsoft, 10 years after the chip came out, that Microsoft actually came out with an operating system that supported the 32-bit chip. That was a 10-year delay.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft tends to come out with technology about 10 years delayed after the standards are there.
Now, you were talking about, keeping up with the industry regs.
Mm-hmm.
Most folks, you don't have to subscribe to all these. Go to the local library, right?
You can go to the local library, yeah, mm-hmm. and just start reading.
Yeah.
Now, fourth, package yourself with a well-written resume that emphasizes where you're going rather than where you've been. I mean, people tend to make a mistake is that they list all of the jobs that they've had, and they tend to get locked into their resume.
Mm-hmm.
But really, you really want to have something that projects where you're going and what you could do, which is it's very important to embed that in your resume. Now, join user groups. There are a lot of IT user groups around, like the... You can join PC user groups, there's Oracle user groups, there's MySQL user groups, Linux user groups. These are all people that like technology, they talk about technology. Go to the user groups and volunteer to help out at the meetings. You know, there's always somebody that needs to help get set up. And you know what? Every time you go to a meeting and work with the folks there at these user groups, these are all people that are working in the field.
Mm-hmm.
You know what happens? They're going to like the way you operate. They're going to like the way you think. And they're going to, and when a job comes up, they're going to think of you.
They're going to invite you into their clubhouse.
Now, the key thing, don't go to the user group and start asking for a job. Nobody will want to talk to you. Just go there because you truly do love the information. Now, go out and survey the employers. And you can survey employers to find out where they're going. And many times you can set up appointments with people in 5 to 10 minutes to find out what's going on and start surveying what's out there. You'll learn a lot. Now, finally, and this is one of the most important things, start doing technical projects at home. Don't sit around saying, "Well, I can't get any experience." Well, you've got your neighbor's probably a bunch of old computers around. You could gather a bunch of old computers. You could make a cluster, a Linux cluster using the free Beowulf software that's out there. You could build a Linux cluster. You just take all these old machines, hook them together with an Ethernet connection, load on the Beowulf cluster software that supports the Linux operating system, and you could make yourself, it wouldn't be a fast machine because you're using old machines from around the neighborhood.
But it's a machine.
But you could say, I've built a cluster. Mm-hmm. Or you could take a machine, you could load on, load a web server on it, you could make a web server out of your house. Or you could install a MySQL database and make a database-driven website. There are a number of things you could do at home. So
I
when
build
you
a few
go
clusters at home.
You like peanut clusters?
Yes.
Well, so the thing is, then when you go out on the job, you can talk about the web server you built, the MySQL database you set up, the Beowulf cluster that you built. You see, they never said that your experience had to be paid experience. That's where people get confused. You just do what you're interested in, and you show because you're interested in things that you have the ability to solve problems and to learn. And then when you go to a user, like if you, say, want to make a Beowulf cluster or a Linux, you go to the Linux user group, and you talk to people, and they'll help you work on your project. And over time, they'll see how you behave, how you solve problems, how inquisitive you are, and you're demonstrating what you would do on the job. Mm-hmm. So you see, you're already behaving like a professional. So this is what we tell our students. So we embed projects within all their classes. So when they get out of Stratford University, either in information systems, software engineering, network design, database design, there, whatever any of our, we've got a whole slew of IT core programs there and degrees. When they get out, they don't just take their transcript. They talk about actual projects they've done. Now, you can get some real good advice, real good keys on how to develop your career. There's a book that I just love, What Color Is Your Parachute? By Dick Bowles.
Yes.
It's been on the bestseller list for the past 25 years. Dick Bowles puts out an annual update to this book, and it basically tells you how to figure out who you are, where you want to go, how to package yourself, how to do the surveys, and how to organize a job search strategy, which is different than just flooding the marketplace with resumes, which typically doesn't work.
Well, we do work here weekends on Federal News Radio. This is the best of Tech Talk. Dadak is away figuring out that whole demographic bonus thing in northern India. He'll be back in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, we've got the best of Tech Talk for you. If you want to learn more about this show, you can go to techtalkonline.com. From there, you can listen to old broadcasts. You can figure out how to listen to the podcast. You can also send us questions. In fact, that is the best way to send a doc a technology question. That way, he has a good chance to fully research what it is you need to know and get back to you live here on the air on Tech Talk. We're heard on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2, and we'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to the best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio. The doc is away on business this week and next, so we've got best of shows for you the next couple of weekends, and we will continue on now here on the best of Tech Talk.
I got the blimp working.
Yeah, you sure do.
I got the
we
blimp.
Have guests in the studio today, and I'm afraid somebody's going to get hurt with this thing.
Oh, my goodness. It's going to give somebody a haircut going down there.
Uh-huh.
So
it is. So
this
Blimpy, explain this thing.
Well, this actually has, it's a helium balloon, helium dirigible.
It looks like it's about the size of one of those balloons you buy at the supermarket that says happy birthday on it, right?
Yeah.
It's a Mylar balloon. It's silver. And now it's stuck against the ceiling.
Oh, it's caught against the.
You might be able to hear this off
yeah.
in the distance.
Well, let me just bring it down here a little bit.
Yeah, you do that. That would be the other down dog.
Oh yeah.
Here it comes. Ah, watch your fingers. He just grabbed it.
Oh yeah, here we go. I'm gonna bring. this is the up and down blade. Well, it has three propellers on it. One propeller goes up and down.
Uh-huh.
and then the other two propellers go forward and backward, and they're basically, you have to get this thing synchronized on which channel you want,
yeah.
And then there are a couple of control methods.
I have the sinking feeling.
Now the couple of control methods here, I may...
Is that the anti-collision avoidance device going
Blimpy,
on there?
Blimpy may need some additional, now it's trying to resynchronize itself. It may need some extra help. But then you can either use the traditional blimp control method, or you can use the airplane control method.
Uh-huh.
And so the airplane control method is, you've got these two joysticks. You can control it one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fact is, I've tried both control methods, Jim, and I crash into everything.
Yeah, I noticed. Well, you broke both the helicopters last week. It's a good thing you don't have a real pilot's license. You never get a real pilot's license.
No, that's right. I have a PhD in physics.
We're
I can't do anything useful. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's do something else.
Okay. That's right.
Right.
Now we're going to talk about Nolan K. Bushnell. Bushnell is father of the video game industry.
Uh-huh.
And founder of Atari. Nolan K. Bushnell was born February 5th, 1943 in Clearfield, Utah. Bushnell...
What is going on?
Yeah, Bushnell received his BSEE from the University of Utah in 1968. Now, while Bushnell was going to University of Utah, he would sneak into the computer labs between 1 and 4 in the morning to play Space War.
Uh-huh.
And Fox and Geese on the university's $7 million deck mainframe. Yeah.
Because it's there.
After he got out of, after he got his bachelor degree, he moved to Santa Clara, California, which is right in the heart of Silicon Valley.
Uh-huh.
That was in 1968. He built his first computer game in a spare bedroom. It was a knockoff of Space Wars. He called it Computer Space. And he tried to sell this. You see, what he did, he commercialized video games. You see, he didn't really invent video games because there were video games that would run on a $7 million computer. There's not much market for that.
No.
He developed games that would run on small PCs you could have in your house.
Huh.
At age 27, he founded Atari with $250 of his own money and another $250 from his business partner, Ted Dabney. The original name of the company was Syzygy.
Syzygy?
Yeah. Syzygy. Syzygy.
Uh-huh.
Now.
Not going to work.
No, actually, Syzygy was not that successful in the beginning.
Go figure.
And then it turned out there was a roofing company with the same name as Syzygy.
That might explain it.
And there was also a hippie commune group out in Mendocino that had trademarked Syzygy. So they had to change the name. And he came up with the name Atari.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bushnell conceived the idea of Pong. Now, Pong was actually the first video game that I ever played.
Pong is burned into my brain, by the way.
Yeah, Pong is, he wasn't developed enough. He wasn't developed enough to write the full...
Oh, the scissors.
Yeah.
You hand them to me? I'm busy playing with a computer over here to make sure things work. I now have the dreaded... These are sharp.
You see, Bushnell had not developed enough to develop the full game, Ping Pong. He could only do Pong. And so Pong has got two paddles, one on the left of the screen, one on the right side of the screen, and you have to hit this little cursor symbol back and forth between the two panels by moving the little paddles up and down.
I've lost brain cells playing this, trust me.
Yeah, well, I mentioned this game to my son, and he said, oh, yeah. He said, I've got a PSP, and he brought in, and we were playing Pong within 5 minutes.
Wow.
He had all the old Atari games.
That's great.
Well, Bushnell conceived the idea of Pong, which would become the world's first commercial video game, and in 1973, they hired their first full-time employee, Al Alcorn. Now, Al was assigned to write the code for Pong, so Al Alcorn wrote Pong. They released it. Now, get this, they started the company in 72. In 73, they had $11 million in revenue.
That's
Pong!
Amazing.
With
That's
Pong!
And this is 1973.
Two 2 years later, their revenues jumped to $36 million. This guy was riding a high kite. He was a high flyer.
This was all there was back then.
Now, shortly after 73, he made his first mistake. There were a couple of guys that, you know, that were sort of friends with some of the Atari employees, and they took some spare parts from the Atari computer, and they had these Atari employees make a printed circuit board that had a few other functions on it, and they put together a little, like a little homebrew computer. And they offered the homebrew computer to Atari to, as part of their product line. The two guys who did it, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak.
I think I know where we're going here.
Now, Bushnell said, you know, I'm not in the computer business. Why don't you guys take that little computer and play with it yourself? So they started Apple Computer with the design that Bushnell turned down, made out of spare Atari parts. Now, in 76, he sold Atari to Warner Brothers for $28 million. Now, he had the company 4 years. He started when he was 27, so at age 31, he was worth $28 million in 1976. Not too shabby. Now, he stayed on for a consultant for a couple of years, but he got fed up with Warner because they were too slow, too conservative, and they didn't want to come out with new computers versions fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they went into their first, Atari went into the coin-operated video game market and soon dominated it. Now, coin-operated video games were really big in the early 80s before home computers came out. And then that market just crashed in 84.
Yeah.
Now, Atari started producing home game systems, and Sears promised to buy them all. By 1982, Atari had grown to $2 billion in annual sales.
Wow.
1982. Now, the crash, remember, for, you know, Atari came around 83, 84.
Mm-hmm.
Atari introduced the 800 computer, which at that time had superior technology to both the Apple II in the IBM PC, with the exception of memory management. But Warner was slow in accommodating the fast-changing computer market. And for instance, Dan Bricklin wanted to put his spreadsheet program VisiCalc on the Atari computer, and they were just too slow to come out with a computer that would support VisiCalc.
Mm-hmm.
VisiCalc was released first on the Apple II. And that is what transformed Apple into the business market.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what got Apple rolling. Atari missed VisiCalc. They missed the Apple design, then they missed VisiCalc. This was under the dynamic management of Warner Communications.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by 1984, Atari had $500 million loss per year, and it was sold at a fire sale by Warner. Now, of course, Bushnell had been out of Atari since 78. But in 78, when he left Atari, he came up with his next big idea. He said, look, why don't I create a restaurant, and I'll have video games in the restaurant, and kids can come in, and they can buy pizza, and then they can play video games. And he was going to use that as sort of a way to get people introduced to Atari. And so he started the Chuck E. Cheese Pizza Time Theater.
Oh, no, so he's to blame for this.
Cheese Pizza Time Theater. It opened in San Jose, the heart of Silicon Valley, in 1978. The company went public in 1981, and at that point, Bushnell's net worth was $70 million. He was riding high. This was back, you know, in the early 80s, where $70 million. But by 1983, Pizza Time Theaters had over 200 theaters, had over 200 restaurants operating internationally, including Canada, Hong Kong, UK. And then he started another business called the Catalyst Technologies, because he was really top of the heap there out in Silicon Valley then in the early 80s. And he would invest $500,000 a pop into new startups. And one of his startups was ETAC, which was very successful. And the second startup, another was Androbot. Now, ETAC made electronic maps for auto and navigation uses that would eventually become the maps that are in our GPS navigation systems. It was ultimately purchased by Rupert Murdoch for $50 million. It's not a bad deal.
That's not a bad deal at all.
Then he they got started on Androbot. Now, this is what really, really set them down. Now, Androbot developed personal robots Bob and Topo. Now, to finance Androbots and the R&D, associated R&D costs, he took personal loans from Merrill Lynch Private Capital, which were secured by Pizza Time stock. And he started going, and Merrill Lynch has said they were going to take Androbot public in 1983. But it turned out, remember, Atari crashed around 82,
right.
83. It turns out that Pizza Time, the Chuck E. Cheese Pizza Time markets began losing money around 83 because people realized it was a cardboard pizza. And Merrill Lynch canceled the Androbot IPO.
If you ever took one bite of it, you'd know that it was cardboard pizza.
That's right. Now, this was after Bushnell had invested more than $5 million. Ultimately, he put almost $25 million in Androbot. Now, Pizza Time was losing money in 83. Bushnell's net worth dropped from $23 to $9 million. In 1984, after he racked up $22 million in debt financing Androbot, yikes, because Bob and Topo never took off, Pizza Time filed for bankruptcy under Chapter 11. Now, that, of course, secured all the money they got from Merrill Lynch. So Merrill Lynch came after him with a vengeance. By 1990, Bushnell had paid back $27.5 million to Merrill Lynch. In 1997, he was forced to sell his last asset, his home, to make the final payment to Merrill Lynch. Now he's working on his newest venture, U-Wink, which is uwink.com, and this is where they have screens, touch screens in restaurants, and you order your food from the touch screen, you pick exactly what you want, you can pay from the touch screen, and then you don't have waiters and waitresses taking your orders or taking your check.
That's a pretty neat idea.
So that's what he's doing now. So there you go, Nolan K. Bushnell, the guy, I mean, during the bad times, he did have a private yacht, which he called Charlie. He spent a lot of time on his
during
yacht.
During the bad times?
Yeah, he'd go when things would get really bad, he'd go out. And
is he still with us?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's still with us.
He's still with us, yeah, Nolan K. Bushnell. He's a very innovative guy, and, you know, he almost had the first PC on the marketplace,
but he
just missed it. Yeah, so he's made millions and he's lost millions, but he's quite a colorful character. There you go. Nolan K. Bushnell, the father of the video game industry and founder of Atari.
When you listen to Tech Talk, you need to be mentally alert at all times because the information you get here could win you a valuable prize. Well, okay, it's a nice prize. Probably like $40 worth of prize. Anyway, so if you're paying attention, you'll know the answer to the question I'm going to ask you in just a few minutes here on the Best of Tech Talk. Get ready to dial. The number is 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. Once again, 877-936-9333. Here for the pop quiz on the Best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio. 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. We'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, 5 of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers, here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for America's favorite new game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's the host and star of our show. It's not Bob Barker. It's not Rosie O'Donnell. No, it's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Actually, it's option D today because the doc is away. All those other people have real jobs, so I'm here. Jim Russ sitting in for Dr. Schertz on the Best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio. A few moments ago, we told you about Nolan K. Bushnell, who was the father of the video game. He created Atari, which rotted so many of our young minds about three decades ago. But he also created something else, which he thought might make Atari work better, or at least be more profitable. If you can tell me what that was, call me now. 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. Once again, 877-936-9333. Here on the Best of Tech Talk. Now, if you get the answer to that question, you win tickets for two at the Escoffier at Stratford University. Fine dining on the campus of Stratford University in Falls Church, Virginia, or at Cafe Kareem, now open at the campus in Woodbridge. You're listening to the Best of Tech Talk.
Let's look at some of the observations over what's going to happen to IT over the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that Graham Phillipson had pondered about. Graham is from Australia. And actually, I liked many of his comments because I agreed with them.
Well, there you go.
Okay, number one, the Internet will become the SuperNet. Now, many devices are
connected. It already is pretty super.
It is pretty super, but, you know, the Internet, we think of just having browsers on it. But now there are so many mobile devices connected to it, phones, cars, household appliances. The trend will continue toward embedded computing where Internet objects as well as general-purpose computers are on the net. So we'll see more and more devices with IP addresses on the Internet, especially when you get IPv6 with 128-bit address space. You got you have enough, you know, addresses for almost every atom in the on the Earth. And you will be able to then have everything connected to the Internet, and they'll be talking back and forth, and you'll have basically what we call embedded computing, ubiquitous computing. This is over the next 10 years, we're going to see that trend more and more and more, where, you know, everything is hooked to the Internet, it talks to the Internet, and we have sort of distributed intelligence. We're going to see a decline of the standalone PC over the next 10 years. And I could already see that. You know, my son brought a PSP, you know, personal PlayStation. Looks like a little tiny device that's about, you know, 4 inches by 6 inches, and he can surf the web on the Wi-Fi connection.
That's pretty neat.
You know, he can get email with it, and he can also play the old Atari games. And so you're going to see people moving away from and being tethered to, you know, a standalone PC. We're going to see the rise of software as a service.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to get away from installing software on their machines, but they're going to log on to services that provide word processing, spreadsheets. It'll all be online. We already see the trend toward that now with Google Docs. Sort of the word for this is cloud computing,
uh-huh.
Where you basically where the process is done somewhere off in the internet cloud, and the beauty of this. Software as a service or cloud computing, it's very easy to share documents or have groups work on it. Around the world, you can basically share a document, you can give people the password to it, and people can edit it anywhere in the world. And so it's going to become so convenient, and as the cost of storage drops, and it's dropping pretty dramatically,
mm-hmm.
We're going to basically see software as a service rise. We're going to see the decline of the copyright. Now, this is really driven by the Internet. I mean, MP3s out there. They have to be another revenue model for these things. And I think we're going to see the record companies, the film studios, stop trying to prosecute people for copyright violations. They're going to try to embed other kinds of revenue into that system.
All right. We're going to play the game now. We've got a potential winner on the line because you're never a winner until you give me the correct answer on the air. Let's go to line number one today. How about that? This is Marshall calling from Potomac, Maryland. Marshall, good morning and welcome to Tech Talk. How are you?
I'm good, actually. Thank you. Good morning.
Good. Have you been listening to us for long?
Since you were on the other radio station.
Wow, that's great. We don't want to mention that other radio station, because here we don't like them a whole lot. Anyway, a few minutes ago, we talked about Nolan K. Bushnell, who created Atari. Did you have a Pong? Did you have an Atari when you were a kid?
I did.
You did?
I had all of them, both of them.
Is Pong burned into your brain?
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah, okay. All right, so...
Along with Breakout.
Breakout, I didn't play that one. All right, so he created Atari. What else did he create?
Well, 1983, I believe it was, he wanted to increase profits by opening a restaurant for kids, Chuck E. Cheese, Pizza Time Theater.
That would be the correct answer. And guess what? Because you knew the food, you win some food. So if you hang on in just a second, Andrew's going to take your information, and you will get tickets for two for fine dining at the Escoffier, Falls Church, Virginia, at the Stratford campus there, which is probably the closest one to you. But they also have Cafe Kareem in Woodbridge. So hang on a second. Marshall, thanks for listening. Thanks for playing. And stay with us here on Tech Talk. And we'll have another episode of the Pop Quiz next week here on the Best of Tech Talk. And we'll be back with more stuff in just a moment on Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. The doctor is away today on business. I'm Jim Ross, sitting in for him here on the Best of Tech Talk, where we say, Facebookers, beware.
Multiple social networks can reveal your secrets. Now, this has been commonly known to people that are in the security business. They know that you could have multiple sources of unclassified information, which, if uncorrelated, don't reveal anything. But if somebody could correlate five sources of unclassified information and put them together, you might be able to weave a story that could infer classified or secret information. Well, the same thing is happening to social networks. Because people might log on to, say, LinkedIn, which is a business network. See, when you get close to the windows, it goes down.
Yeah, well, you can't, unless you're watching on Home and Garden TV, you can't see.
See, no,
Blimpy has gone to the window.
Okay,
and
I'm gonna try to drive him away from the window here.
You know what about these windows? They probably have some sort of metallic coating on them.
Okay, I'm driving Blimpy back out of harm's way.
Are you sure about
well,
that?
Well, no, not really. Okay, come on, Blimpy, come on, Blimpy. Blimpy's going. Come on, Blimpy. Okay.
What I want to do.
We've got a drunk drive. Listen, I hope I can't get a ticket for drunk Blimp driving.
You need to land Blimpy on that table over there. You know, I think we need to do another experiment. We figured out that there's the air return over in the one corner. We've got the air ducts here. We need to get the air blown out of here and see how we can
find
fight those
kind
of currents.
Air currents are definitely an issue in a radio studio.
It's fun.
Well,
it's an experiment.
It is definitely an experiment. Well,
and
Google,
we're all about that.
Researchers at Google started looking at this, and they actually published a paper which is going to be coming out at the Web 2.0 Security and Privacy Conference, which will be held in May, and it's called Undermining Privacy and Social Networks. It's available now on the web in PDF form.
Mm-hmm.
And what they discovered, for instance, somebody could say, as a hypothetical situation, go on to a business social network called LinkedIn and have things that they would want to reveal to their business associates.
Okay.
Then they could be on another website like MySpace, which would have maybe some kooky friends that were friends of theirs and exploits that they'd done there. And perhaps there would be one piece of data, like a login name or something that could link the MySpace account with the LinkedIn account. And all of a sudden, all of your business people can... Okay, I gotta save Blimpy.
Blimpy, I've
gotta save. What's happened? I gotta get Blimpy. I gotta turn Blimpy around now. Okay, yeah. Now I gotta. Okay, Blimpy, let's go, baby.
Why are you flying it toward my face?
I don't know. I'm out of trouble. So they actually did quite a bit of, and now there are tools out which can actually surf the web, and they can try to look for linkages. And the approach that Google calls when you link these different social networks, they call it merging social graphs.
Hmm.
And they were able to go through a number of examples where they were able to reveal quite private data that people thought was actually not available. For instance, Netflix revealed data about user activity. And the different kinds of movies that people were ordering, but they didn't actually tie in their name, but they had some other data on it. Then if you went to a movie data site called IMDb,
yeah.
It was possible to look at user activity on IMDb and get correlations with Netflix, because people would actually look at a review and then order the Netflix movie, and by correlating the dates, they were actually able to connect up actual users with Netflix data quite easily. Now, the Google's team proposed a solution of all kinds of privacy warnings, but they basically said, look, if you put something on the net, just assume that everybody's going to see it, no matter yeah. which social group you're in, because actually you can very easily correlate the thing. There's also a lot of information regarding health records. And they looked at health records that were sent to insurers. They combined that with publicly available information about, like if somebody was looking at Wikipedia articles on health conditions, they could actually correlate health records with other things, and you could actually draw some conclusions. So the Google's research team is called Undermining Privacy on Social Networks. It's something to be aware of, especially
yeah.
something you should watch what your kids are doing on the net.
Absolutely.
Because they could be revealing way too much.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
What does lorem ipsum mean?
Lorem ipsum. Well, have you ever seen this? Whenever people are writing something, they Greek it in. You know, you do some...
Greek it in.
Hey,
Greek it up, everybody.
Greek it in. You know, when you're actually writing a document and you're laying it out and you just want to fill it with a bunch of... text. They, you know, sort of all the desktop publishing, they have this pseudo Latin thing that starts out with lorem ipsum,
mm-hmm.
and it goes on after that, and then you fill it in with this pseudo Latin, and they call it Greeking the page, so you can see how it will look. Well, there was Richard McClintock, a Latin professor at Hampton Sydney College of Virginia, wondered where this came from, because lorem ipsum actually is actually not grammatically correct in Latin. So he started uh-huh. looking around for things, and he found a quote from Cicero, and this is actually a cannibalized section of a sentence from Cicero, and they basically it should be dolorum instead of lorem, and they
uh-huh.
just dropped it off. And back in the 1500s, some printer just sort of took this Latin text and they just sort of took a piece of it, and that has been carried on and on and on. And actually what it means, when you go back and put it together and take out the errors of from Cicero, it means there's no one who loves pain itself, who seeks after it and wants to have it simply because it is pain.
I say that's an accurate statement.
Yes, indeed.
Well,
so there
maybe
you go.
A few people.
Lorem ipsum is actually, it should be dolorem ipsum, and those are the first two words of that Greeking phrase.
This is the best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. We'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Best of Tech Talk.
The National Science Board issued a report, and the report was titled Asia Challenges U.S. Innovation Leadership. This is particularly a timely report because I've spent so much time in Asia. I've spent in China as well as India, so I've seen it firsthand. We have probably 1,000 international students going to Stratford University out in Tyson's Corner, and a good 600 or 650 are from India. They're coming over here to learn software engineering at Stratford University. So we've really seen firsthand the innovation from both the U.S. perspective as well as the Asian perspective. Now, China is achieving a tremendous amount of synergy, according to this report, by increasing its investment in science and engineering education, in research, and in technology infrastructure. Many foreign nations, especially China and other Asian countries, are rapidly developing their national innovation systems because they're trying to do what the United States have been doing so effectively over the past 30 or 40 years. The report, Science and Engineering Indicators 2010, is published every 2 years by the National Science Board, which is a 25-member expert council that advises the National Science Foundation, the President, and Congress on science and technology policy. Asia's rapid ascent as a major world science and technology center beyond Japan has been fueled by developments in China. Governments in Asia have implemented a host of policies to boost science and technology capabilities as a means of assuring their competitive edge. Now, the United States continues to maintain a position of leadership, but has experienced a gradual erosion of its position in many specific areas, and this report is sounding a warning. Asia has narrowed the gap due to sustained annual increases by China in investment. Now, U.S. R&D investment as a ratio of GDP remained relatively constant since the mid-80s at around 2.7%. However, the federal share of R&D in the U.S. has consistently been declining year after year after year. In contrast, Asian nations have rapidly expanded the government support of R&D, whereas we're putting our money into bailout programs mm-hmm. and other things which are not specifically tied to R&D. The Asian countries are targeting R&D and not having just broad-based government handout programs under the guise of bailout.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference is only getting worse because the United States and Asia have taken completely different paths in the area of corporate investment. Now the report goes on to say that increasingly governments around the world have come to regard the movement toward the knowledge-based economy as a key to economic progress. That requires a well-trained workforce. Therefore, they've invested in upgrading and expanding their higher education systems and broadening participation across the way. And we're seeing that major investment going on in India right now. The U.S. education system maintains critical strengths, especially at research universities that perform 56% of the U.S. basic research. But its position continues to decline in terms of science and engineering graduates. U.S. students earned only about 11% of the world's 4 million science and engineering university degrees, compared to 21% in China and 19% in the European Union. A large portion of these degrees in the United States are awarded to foreign students. Like our master's degree in software engineering, the bulk of the students are from Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably true in the graduate school across the country. International students receive 24% of U.S. master's degrees, 33% of the U.S.'s doctoral degrees in science and engineering, and 4% of the science and engineering bachelor degree. So you can see what's happening is the U.S. students are getting their bachelor's degree and bailing out before they get to graduate school.
Why are they doing that, do you think?
Because they're going for the bucks. Mm. Because they can bail out and they can make more money right away.
Gotcha.
Whereas the Asian student is focused on the degree and getting a higher, getting a higher degree and not focus so much on the money.
Mm-hmm.
About half of all foreign-born scientists and engineers are from Asia, and more than a third of the U.S. residents holding doctorate degrees come from Asia, 22% from China and 14% from India. So we're seeing these trends over and over and over, and we've seen them for quite some time, and it is alarming because the U.S. is now making investment choices that have long-term negative implications in terms of our ability to compete on the world market. Now, there are other factors that are working against the United States, and let me review some other factors relating to demographics and to give you the big picture, because I think there are significant policy errors on the part of the government that are hurting our long-term ability to innovate and are actually damaging what people call the innovation ecosystem in the United States. Now, let's look at demographics. In India, in Asia in particular, there's what they call the demographic bonus. I've talked about this earlier,
right.
but let me just explain what that means. If you take a developing country that's poor initially, they have poor health care and poor education, and then you improve the health. When you have that situation, you have a relatively high fertility rate of around 6.5 babies per woman. And you need that because the babies die and the families need more kids working on the farm or in their business. Then you inject improved health care. The babies don't die. And then all of a sudden, you've got a huge uptick in your population count because you've got a fertility rate of 6.5 and the children live because of the good health care. Then about typically around 6 to 7 years after the health care goes into the system, you start educating those youth. Once the women are educated, they say, to heck with 6.5 babies. And the fertility rate drops to between 2 and 3 children per woman, typically around 2.5. So you have this huge surge in population, and then because of the high fertility rate, and then you've got a drop off in the fertility rate, and that leaves what they call a demographic bonus, a large block of individuals who are unencumbered by children, who can now work on developing their careers and work on developing the economy. In India, for instance, in the north, which is the poor part of India, the fertility rate's about 6.5 now. The north is about ready to experience a demographic bonus over the next 20 to 25 years of 45 million workers are going to be produced and are going to be contributed to the global economy. The demographic bonus occurred in the southern part of India over the last 20 years, and that was responsible for the huge IT boom down in Bangalore, Chennai, and Hyderabad. If you look at the average age in India, it's only 26 years old.
Mm.
The average age in northern India is only 22, and in southern India, it's 35, because southern India has been through the demographic bonus. So we're going to see India with an additional 45 million workers entering the global economy. Now let's look at the United States. in the next 25 years, we're going to be short 25 million workers. Why? Because our people are retiring.
Yeah.
And the fertility rate in the United States is only 2.1, barely enough to replace those who are retiring or dying.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got an extreme shortage of workers in the United States, and there's really not much we can do about it. The average
but import those people.
The average age in the United States is 45.
Mm-hmm.
The average age in Europe, which is even in worse condition than we're in, is 48.
Mm-hmm.
Compare that to the average age in China of 26. Now, in southern India, it's 35 because they've been through the demographic bonus. In northern India, it's 22. So we need people. We need people dramatically in order to survive, in order to maintain the innovation, what's going on. Now, what's happening with the government policy? We're shutting down the spigots on letting the youth in.
Mm-hmm.
And we need those youth to maintain the demographics in order to sustain our innovation. And at the policy, they're shutting down student visas. Very hard for students to get visas. They're not allowed to stay here after they get educated because they're not expanding the H-1B visas. So they just go home and start their companies at home. Now, in the past 20 years, more than half of the companies that have, technology companies that have started were started by people who came from other countries. And we had the ability to attract people from other countries, educate them, throw them into our innovation ecosystem, and they would start companies. Say, like AMD was started by somebody from another country, for instance. And so our forte was the innovation ecosystem that could attract people, and we were developing the companies here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the U.S. is now telling people to go home, making the U.S. less welcome to other people coming in. And that's damaging to the U.S. ecosystem. Secondly, the U.S. is contributing less dollars to R&D overall because we've moved it into other areas. And the third thing we're doing is we're taking small companies and we're raising the taxes, which make it even harder to start. So we're actually destroying the innovation ecosystem that's been so important to the U.S. in the past. These changes have long-term implications in terms of our competitive ability. And that's why when I'm in Asia, people are looking at what we're doing and they're saying, you guys are passing the baton to us and you're doing it voluntarily.
Mm, that's interesting.
Yeah.
We're getting light on time, so let's just stay here.
I have a question. Sure.
Just for a light moment here off the forum. Can you get a hero at the Escoffier at Stratford University?
I don't know. We've never served heroes up there before, but maybe when we have a sandwich making workshop, we do.
We should do that. Well, that would
do heroes.
Be a nice segue into our next category here, our next topic, huh?
That's right.
Website of the week?
That's right. Website of the week. Foodista!
Aha!
Now, Foodista, this is, in Web 2.0, we allow for interactive web development. And somebody got the idea, well, why not let people sort of contribute their own recipes? So Foodista is actually a collaborative project designed to build high-quality cooking recipes and a high-quality cooking encyclopedia. Now, Foodista organizes the information into four linked categories: recipes, foods, the basic ingredients that make up the recipes, cooking techniques, methods to prepare the foods, and kitchen tools, all the kinds of gadgets that you have in the kitchen. Now, the site pictures foods from the Flickr Creative Commons. It features pictures of all kinds of gadgets. Now, it also has tools for food bloggers. It's embedded widgets that allow bloggers to create automatically links from Foodista to the food blog. Now, the most important thing is that it lets people go in and edit the recipes.
Mm-hmm. And that is about all we've got time for this week on the Best of Tech Talk. We'll be back next week, and we'll talk about some more exciting tech news, your chance to win a fabulous prize here on Tech Talk on Federal News Radio. We'll see you next week.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
We have playoff football on the air today here on Federal News Radio. Ravens and Steelers in what is sure to be a slugfest at 4 o'clock. Partly sunny, highs in the 40s today. It is 30 degrees at 10 a.m.
Paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from broadcasters solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Now, here's your host, Wayne Zell.
Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this very fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests that are designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. The show is brought to you by Odin